The following previews are of Graphic Audio Productions, rated for mature audiences due to scenes of intense violence and sexual situations.
Deathlands Number 9, Red Equinox. The companions have lost one of their own.
No!
But now they have a new friend with knowledge of the pre-dark tech of the gateways.
What's your name, friend?
Rick. Rick Ginsburg. I was frozen so the doctors in the future might be able to cure me. But it looks like there isn't much of a future left here anymore.
But the Deathlands won't be the destination this time.
No, this can't be right. According to my calculations, we're smack dab in the middle of Russia. Somewhere near where Moscow used to be.
Phew. We in some deep shit now, Ryan.
And Ryan must now confront the Russian officer who allowed him to escape from the wastes of Alaska, Major Commissar Grigory Zimyanin.
Major Commissar, we have the information you wanted. Our scouts reported seeing a mean-looking man with only one eye, a tall, attractive woman with very red hair, and an old man with a walking stick.
Are your people sure about these three strangers?
There is no doubt.
So, they are here. Somehow the Americans and the one called Ryan Cotter have returned. And this time, I will be ready for them.
Deathlands Number 9, Red Equinox. 7 unabridged hours in Graphic Audio. The movie in your mind.
Deathlands Number 9, Red Equinox, will be in travel centers and truck stops throughout North America starting March 2006. Or call 1-800-670-5220 to reserve or download your advance copy. For your convenience, this information is also printed on the cover of this book.
When an alien substance breaches Earth's atmosphere over four former Soviet republics, it triggers a scientific race between the United States and Russia that could culminate in unimaginable weapons of mass destruction. One man is capable of harnessing the energy of that substance from the far reaches of the galaxy. The Russians had him. Our shadow governments got him. Islamic extremists want what he's created. And all he wants is a week of gambling.
Viva Las Vegas!
But for Hal Brignola and the men and women of Stony Man Farm, this will be no vacation.
This can't be happening.
What? What is it?
All four missiles are recalibrating themselves to strike civilian targets.
I'm here to help you, Mr. Decker. But only if you wish to help yourself. What happened to your ranch was the result of a meteor shower.
That wasn't no rocks falling from the sky that leveled my ranch and killed my wife. Those were explosions. And I'm walking out of here and going straight to the county sheriff.
Bad choice, Mr. Decker.
No! No!
Come on, Paul. We gotta catch up to that van.
Iron Man, am I seeing things?
That van just sprouted airplane wings.
Holy shit! It's airborne!
Paul, stop the car! Stop the car now!
McCarter, this is Apache. You've got hostiles approaching. American Tiger Stripes, about 20 feet below you. Should we take them out?
Hell no. We're taking out those bastards ourselves.
When it comes to action and intrigue, nothing comes close to Stony Man Number 80, Doomsday Conquest.
Stony Man Number 80, Doomsday Conquest, will be in travel centers and truck stops throughout North America starting March 2006. Or call 1-800-670-5220 to reserve or download your advance copy. For your convenience, this information is also printed on the cover of this book.
And now, our feature presentation.
Graphic audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic audio presents Simon R. Green's Deathstalker Honor. Narrated by Richard Rowan. With performances by Nanette Savard, Terrence Aselford, Colleen Delaney, Ann Flosnick, Nick Sampson, and Mort Shelby. Graphic audio sound design by Dan Smith. And directed by Richard Rowan. Episode 2, The Enemies of Humanity. Daniel Wolfe, youngest son of that infamous clan, passed through the dead empty space of the Forbidden Sector in a stolen ship, heading for the cold metal hell that was Shub, the world the rogue AIs had made. He was alone, and he was scared, but he wouldn't even let himself think of turning back. He had to go to Shub. That was where his father Jacob was, and his father needed him, even if the old man was dead. Perhaps especially then. Jacob Wolfe had died during the last great battle between the Wolfes and the Campbells, a harsh and bloody affair that had ended in the destruction of Clan Campbell. It had been a great victory, a triumphant end to a centuries-old feud, but Jacob hadn't lived to see it, cut down by an unseen hand in the midst of battle. A good death for an old warrior, many said, as though that was a comfort. Daniel had mourned his late father for many reasons, but had more or less gotten over it. Until Jacob's body turned up in Lionstone's court one day, standing on its own 2 feet, bearing a message for the Empress from the rogue AIs of Shub. Somehow, they had obtained the missing corpse and rebuilt it into a ghost warrior, a metal presence within a human frame, run by computer implants. Shub spoke through its mouth. Its message had been cold and uncompromising, but Daniel had seen traces of his late father's personality in the ghost warrior, even though everyone else said that was impossible. And he had finally abandoned his family and his beloved sister Stephanie to go in search of his dead father. And that meant crossing the dreaded Forbidden Sector to the unknown world of the rogue AIs, to Shub, even though those who went there never came back alive. There wasn't much in the Forbidden Sector, a few planets too far from the norm to be worth terraforming, a handful of dying suns the color of blood run through too many generations, and a hell of a lot of space. Cold, empty, silent space. There was no comm traffic this far out on the rim, no voices to fill the endless dark as Daniel's stolen ship pressed on toward Shub. He felt very alone, far from everyone and everything he knew, and he hated it. He'd never had to be alone before. For as long as he could remember, Stephanie had always been there, fiercely protective, doing all the thinking for both of them. Above and beyond that, their father had made all the important decisions, surrounding his youngest son with the security of perfectly planned days. And when Stephanie or Jacob weren't around, they were always the servants to keep him company, to wait on his every whim, and remind him of what he was supposed to do next. There had been a wife, too, but that had been an arranged marriage, and he spent as little time with her as possible. She was dead now, and he didn't miss her at all. Now here he was, the only living thing on a converted cargo ship, his only companion, a ship's AI called Moses. It tried hard, but it was only a low-level intelligence, programmed to deal with cargo manifests and the occasional dock crew. Since Daniel had stolen the ship from the Church of Christ the Warrior, its few topics of conversation tended to revolve around official church dogma, none of which interested Daniel in the least. Mostly he spent his days roaming the steel corridors and echoing cargo bays of his ship, keeping moving just to be doing something. Sometimes he just stayed in his cabin and sat in the corner, hugging his knees to his chest, rocking silently to and fro. He'd acquired his ship, the Heaven's Tears, on Technos 3. Things had gone terribly wrong for his clan. The rebels had overrun his family's star drive factory and blown it to pieces, scattering and overwhelming a small army of church troops in the process.
Daniel reasoned that, with the factory gone, he no longer had any family responsibilities left on Technos 3, and so was finally free to go looking for his dead father. He made sure Stephanie was safe, and then walked out on her, ignoring her strident calls for him to come back, and made his way fairly easily through the general chaos to the nearby landing pads, where the church ships were docked. He chose one of the smaller vessels, pretty much at random, strode on board, and demanded the skeleton crew hand over control of the ship to him. He was an aristocrat, after all, and they were mere church technos. He was genuinely surprised when they told him to go take a hike, and shot the nearest techno in honest outrage. Having thus committed himself, Daniel cut down the other two with his sword while they were still reaching for their weapons. Very few people ever said no to a wolf, and that was at least partly because all of them, even Daniel, were bloody good with a sword, or any other kind of weapon. He threw the bodies off the ship, sealed all the hatches, and took off without bothering to ask for clearance. And given the widespread disorder on all sides, no one bothered to challenge him. At the time, killing the three technos hadn't bothered Daniel at all. He'd needed the ship, and the technos had been in his way. But as days turned to weeks alone on board the Heaven's Tears, he seemed to feel their presence more and more. He cleaned up all the bloodstains himself, as a kind of penance, but he still saw their faces in his dreams. At night, lying alone in his bed, he thought he heard noises in the corridor outside his cabin. He kept the door locked and slept with his light on. It was always night in space. Only once had he been distracted in his search for his father. When war finally broke out all across the Empire, he watched the endless news coverage with numbed shock. He couldn't believe what was really happening. His personal view of the universe had been turned upside down, and he didn't understand anything anymore. Still, he comforted himself that Jacob would know what to do to put things right again. Jacob always knew what to do. That was what fathers were for. He concentrated on getting to Shub without being intercepted. He had to rescue his father, because he'd let him down so many times when he was alive. And though he often wished for Stephanie's company, he was glad he was doing it without her. Doing it alone was the man's way, and he needed to be the man, the wolf, his father had always wanted him to be. Daniel had never really thought of himself as a man, or at least his father's definition of a man, but he hoped this would finally tip the scales in his favor. He wanted, needed Jacob to tell him he was a man, so he could believe it at last. He'd watched most of the rebellion happen while his journey was interrupted on the planet Loki. He'd had to land there to recharge his ship systems, and then found himself unable to leave as civil war raged around the main starport. If he tried to take off, all sorts of people would have shot him out of the sky for any number of reasons, and the Heaven's Tears had damn all in the way of decent shields. So Daniel had been forced to lock himself inside the ship and wait for it all to be over, one way or another. As long as he stayed inside his ship, he couldn't be recognized as an aristo or a wolf, either of which could have gotten him shot on sight. Luckily, a small converted cargo ship wasn't much of a prize, so both sides left him pretty much alone. Daniel had sat on the bridge and watched the rebellion on his main view screen. In the end, he was stranded on Loki for months, venturing outside only when he had to for necessary supplies. The war was over in a matter of days, but the fighting and anarchy dragged on and on. Far too many people had guns and were unwilling to give them up. Daniel kept his head down, stuck to the shadows, and killed anyone who saw his face, just as a precaution. The killing didn't bother him at all, but still he heard footsteps in the night and clutched at his bedclothes like a child. On his view screen, Daniel watched in disbelief and horror as Lionstone was toppled and the families made their deal with Jack Random. He cried hot, angry tears for the loss of all he understood and made vague, angry promises to himself of certain retribution. When the chaos finally died down sufficiently for him to risk escaping into space again, he could have called home to see how Clan Wolf was doing, or just to see how Stephanie was, but in the end he didn't. They might have been angry that he wasn't there to fight the rebels with them, and they would have tried to talk him out of doing what he knew he had to do. Daniel sat slumped in the command chair on his bridge and brooded over what little information he had. He was a big man, in his early 20s, with a great hulking frame he'd inherited from his father, and a face that mostly tended towards a scowl or a sulk. Daniel had always been clumsy as a child, until Jacob beat it out of him, so that even now he tended to keep his movements to a minimum, and did everything with exaggerated grace and care. He wore his long hair in a simple pigtail, and had only the set of clothes he'd run away in. The ship kept them fresh, but they were beginning to show the strain. In his constant search for something to pass the time, he'd reluctantly taken to working out regularly with improvised weights. He hated it with a passion, but he no longer had a convenient body shop to turn to when his muscles started sagging, and he had some vague idea he might have to fight his way in and out of Shub. As a result, he was in better shape than he'd ever been in his life, and felt pretty good about it. Doing something he hated made him feel virtuous, and he thought it was something his father would approve of.